Usually, like when you think about building a home, there's a pretty strict, undeniable sequence to the whole process, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You lay a concrete foundation, you frame the walls, and then, eventually you put on a roof.
Exactly. And that structure is completely bound by physical space,
Yeah.
by the laws of physics. So if life forces you to move across the country, or say across an entire ocean, you have absolutely no choice but to just leave that physical house behind.
Right, because it's permanently rooted to a very specific GPS coordinate. You just can't pack up a brick and mortar foundation in a suitcase and take it with you.
But what if you could? What if a house wasn't actually made of concrete and drywall, but was constructed entirely out of people?
Now that is a wild concept.
Right. And what if there was a way to tangibly rewrite the geography and even the timeline of your family just to heal the fractures caused by moving away? Well, welcome to today's deep dive, where we are exploring a staggering attempt to do exactly that.
Yeah, it's an incredible topic today.
It really is. We are working with an amazing stack of sources today for you. Specifically, we've got extracts from the Arturo web portal, which includes these deeply intimate diaries and reflections from artist Gerald Duque's book, Trastio.
Which is just a brilliant book, by the way.
Truly. And alongside those written reflections, we also have this comprehensive visual breakdown of his monumental artwork. It's this massive pictorial assemblage titled Familia Duque Gallego.
So we are really looking at how a physical piece of art transcends being just, a pretty picture hung on a wall. It actually becomes an active, functional piece of what he calls effective architecture.
Effective architecture. I love that. And just a quick note for you listening, this isn't going to be some dry traditional art history lecture. We are examining a literal tool for emotional reconciliation following the really deep trauma of migration.
Exactly. It's so much more than just paint on canvas.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the title of the book itself, Trastio. Now, if you were in Spain, the word Trastio might mean, I don't know, tinkering around, maybe messing with some gadgets, or just idly passing the time.
Right, kind of just fiddling with things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But in Colombia, which is where the Duque family's story originates, a trastio is a physical move, a relocation. However, Yarrow Duque's diaries make it super clear we are not just talking about renting a moving van and casually changing your zip code.
No, not at all. It is explicitly framed as an existential migration.
Existential migration.
Yeah, it involves literally packing up and carrying your entire culture, your language, your deepest affections, and quite honestly, the heavy, agonizing weight of uprooting yourself, just carrying all of that on your back.
And that existential weight, that's really the lens through which we have to view this artwork, right?
Absolutely. It operates way more as a map of a massive emotional relocation than just a standard family portrait.
Which completely alters how you have to approach looking at the canvas. Because recognizing this as an existential map means the way Duque places his family members within this assemblage, it has absolutely nothing to do with traditional aesthetics.
Right, he isn't trying to create a visually balanced, pretty composition for a gallery wall somewhere. He is meticulously building that house we talked about earlier.
The effect of architecture.
Exactly. He is constructing his effective architecture. And to understand the mechanics of this map, we really have to look at the foundation of the family structure first. But ironically, the artist doesn't put that foundation at the bottom of the piece.
No, he puts it at the absolute top.
He situates it at the very visual summit of the entire assemblage.
Which is just so striking. There they are, his father Edgar and his mother Rubiela. And the diaries note that their placement represents the original journey that kicked off this entire narrative. They left the agricultural, coffee-growing region of Sevilla to establish new roots in the bustling city of Cali in Colombia.
Right. And it's important to note he paints them at approximately 60 years of age.
Yeah, and this is where the architectural metaphor takes on a very literal function within the artwork. But I have to say, I'm struggling a bit with the visual layout here.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, placing the parents at the absolute peak of the structure, doesn't that inherently reinforce this, like, old school, top-down, patriarchal hierarchy? I mean, they look almost like monarchs presiding over their subjects down below.
I can totally see why you'd read it that way at first glance.
And furthermore, by choosing to paint them at 60 years old, when, the dust has settled and they've presumably found some stability, isn't he kind of glossing over the severe poverty and the brutal struggles they must have endured in their youth when they first arrived in Cali?
Right, you are pointing out a very real tension there, and it's one the artist actively addresses in his own reflections. To really make sense of their placement, we have to separate this concept of chronological truth from effective truth.
Okay, chronological versus effective truth. Explain that.
Well, if Duke were acting as just a visual journalist, yeah, he would paint the chronological reality. He'd paint them as these terrified, impoverished 20-somethings stepping off a bus with absolutely nothing. But his goal here is completely different.
So they aren't positioned at the top to rule as monarchs.
Exactly. They are placed there because they function as the family's moral center of gravity.
The moral center of gravity.
Yeah. By depicting them at 60, he's capturing the precise moment when all of that youthful struggle, all the poverty, the sweat, it finally sedimented into wisdom. 60 is the exact age when they definitively became this unshakable safe haven for the rest of the family.
Oh, I see. So if he had painted them in their fragile youth, the structural integrity of the painting would, like, visually and conceptually just collapse.
Precisely. At 60, they are the load-bearing walls.
Because you can't build a second story if the first story is made of wet clay. You need that hardened, cured concrete. So the parents provide this symbolic, durable space where the family can always return, even when they get scattered across the globe.
Which brings us perfectly to the heavy emotional weight those walls are actually supporting.
Right. Which leads us to the next generation, right there in the middle of the composition. Because if the parents are the foundation, the children are the ones who actually have to survive the earthquake.
The earthquake of international diaspora.
Man, what a phrase. So we look at this middle band of the cantus, and we find his sisters, Marlucia and Maria Cristina. They are painted at around 40 years of age, but the contrast between their emotional states is just striking.
It really is night and day.
The source notes detail that Marta is depicted right in the middle of the terrifying vertigo of her recent arrival in the United States. You can see it. She is carrying all that fresh fear, that really deep sense of alien uprooting.
It perfectly captures that raw, disorienting shock of being a newly arrived immigrant, you know, completely stripped of your familiar context.
Yeah. But then, painted directly next to her is Cristina, who has already been living in her new country for 20 years. So she visually represents assimilation. She's the adaptation that only comes after decades of struggle.
And what's fascinating here is the deliberate choice to paint them shoulder to shoulder, despite them being at such wildly different stages of the migrant experience.
It's not just a coincidence.
Not at all. This is a rigorous documentation of sisterly solidarity. In the face of the intense alienation that comes with migration, like when your identity is fracturing and you feel like you belong to two places and nowhere all at once, that shoulder-to-shoulder bind becomes an ethical pillar.
An ethical pillar holding up the whole thing.
Yeah, it serves as a pure survival mechanism, holding up the family structure against the massive pressure of assimilation.
It's basically akin to being thrown off a ship in the middle of a freezing ocean. And that visual of them shoulder to shoulder, it's the physical lifeline thrown across the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because in reality, migration imposes borders, right? Mm-hmm. It imposes time zones, customs agents, thousands of miles of physical distance.
It makes it practically impossible to literally lean on someone's shoulder.
Exactly. So the canvas is actively subverting physics here. The artist is using his materials to literally compress geography. He takes this invisible emotional support system and makes it entirely tactile.
He crafts this amazing alternate reality where physical distance is just entirely stripped of its power over the family dynamic.
And the manipulation of the physical world doesn't even stop with compressing geographical space. The canvas actively rebels against time itself, too.
Which is such a cool aspect of this work.
We see this play out when we look at the artist himself, Jairo, and his brother, Carlos Alberto. Jairo paints Carlos Alberto at 30 years old. The diaries describe this as a deeply luminous, really vital period in his brother's life. But at the time of creating this artwork, Jairo and Carlos Alberto had been separated by international borders for nearly 2 decades.
20 whole years of physical absence, yet the portrait permanently locks him in at age 30.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like capturing a perfect memory in emotional amber. The harsh realities of time and distance, they just aren't allowed to oxidize their bond.
That's a great way to put it.
He seems to be saying that regardless of what the calendar or, you know, a driver's license dictates today, within the architecture of his own heart, his brother is preserved in that specific radiant light.
And this is the ultimate triumph of effective truth over chronological truth again. The artist refuses to act as a notary for the passage of time. He is staging a full-on rebellion against the deterioration that distance naturally imposes on human relationships. He's choosing to dictate his own emotional timeline instead.
Which is beautiful, but it also makes his own self-portrait so jarring. because we have this delicate concept of emotional amber, right? And then we arrive at Gyro's depiction of himself.
Oh, yeah, the red.
Yes. He paints his own portrait over this blaring, highly saturated, incredibly noisy red background. When I first saw that in the visual breakdown, it felt entirely out of place to me. I mean, it borders on a cliche like the egotistical, tortured artist screaming for attention amidst the quiet dignity of his family's story. Doesn't that violently distract from the shared narrative he is trying to build?
I mean, it is undeniably loud. It's deliberately disruptional to the viewer's eye. But reading through the Tresteo diaries completely dismantles the idea that this is born out of some artistic ego.
Really? How so?
The red is intensely noisy because it is the literal visual manifestation of an open wound.
An open wound caused by the migration itself.
Specifically, it signifies what Gyro refers to as his voluntary exile. You see, while his siblings and parents were dealing with the realities of their respective environments, he was the one who actually chose to leave.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so that red background, it represents the agonizing, static noise of guilt. It is the color of the painful, urgent need to reconstruct these family ties from afar, which is heavily compounded by the knowledge that he was the one who walked away.
That is heavy.
It exposes the raw emotional cost of being the observer who left the family structure just so he could eventually paint its story.
Okay, that fundamentally shifts the perspective for me. It's not a demand for attention at all. It's a confession. It's an admission of culpability. He is highlighting a gaping fracture that he caused within himself.
Exactly.
And capturing that level of raw emotional honesty, the violent rupture of migration, the lingering guilt, the necessity of sisterly survival, it requires a medium that can actually carry that kind of weight.
Which is why the materials matter so much.
Right, because you couldn't possibly convey all of that on a smooth, perfectly square, mass-produced canvas from an art supply store. The medium itself would feel entirely contradictory to the message.
The physical materials absolutely must align with the emotional gravity of the subject. A pristine white canvas would just strip the grit and the reality right out of this narrative.
And the materials he ultimately chooses are fascinating. Looking at the visual breakdown, this artwork is massive. It is this rustic assemblage composed of disparate, irregular wooden pieces. It almost resembles a heavy, imposing collage of mismatched timber.
Well, in contemporary art, the materials utilized are never neutral, you know? They carry their own inherent history. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, this rough, splintered wood functions as a geological archive for the Duke family.
A geological archive.
Yeah. It immediately channels the dignity, the austerity, and the immense manual labor of their agricultural roots back in the coffee-growing region of Sevilla. He is anchoring their modern story on the very substance that symbolizes their origin.
That makes so much sense. And beyond the material itself, there is a deeply performative nature to how it's actually assembled. Like, Gyro doesn't just paint everyone onto one large flat sheet of plywood.
No, he doesn't.
Each family member is assigned their own distinct, separate piece of wood. These pieces have totally different dimensions, unique textures, and their own specific splinters. It visually honors the reality that every single person experienced their own individual trauma and their own individual transit during the migration.
Right, because nobody's grief is identical to another's. They exist as completely autonomous pieces of material, much like the family members existing in totally different countries.
But the true weight of the piece comes from the physical act of creation. The artist takes these heavy, splintered, mismatched pieces of wood and literally nails and glues them together.
It's a very physical, almost aggressive process.
It's a forceful, almost violent act of construction. He is using a hammer and nails to literally force the universe to reunite his family. He is suturing the geographical wounds with his own hands, physically building them into what the sources call a single symbolic body.
A single symbolic body. That phrase just perfectly encapsulates the entire effort. It demonstrates that family cohesion doesn't rely on everyone being cut from the exact same cloth or, you know, living under the exact same roof.
Right.
It requires deliberate, forceful, physical effort to keep disparate pieces connected despite the literal oceans between them.
And that effort is monumental. But, you know, it brings up a really harsh reality regarding the passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens to this single symbolic body as real-world time marches on outside the wooden frame of the artwork? The artwork can freeze time all at once, But biology always continues its own march.
Biology always imposes its own rules, and the deep dive into these sources brings us right to the present day, which adds a profoundly heavy layer to the piece.
It really does.
Because the parents, Edgar and Rubiela, the load-bearing walls of the family, they have passed away. And the sister, Marta Lucia, has also passed.
So the painting is no longer just defying geography and international borders. It is now defying mortality itself.
It proves that the artwork is not a closed system. It has organically evolved. What initially began as a spatial bridge, an artist's attempt to reach across oceans and time zones, has transformed into an intergenerational bridge.
A bridge through time.
Exactly. It functions today as a foundational historical document for the family.
Meaning the descendants, right? The nieces, the nephews, the grandchildren. They can physically stand in front of this massive wooden assemblage and interact with a history they might not have even lived through themselves.
They can look at those faces, examine the actual grain of that rustic wood, and immediately grasp the massive sacrifices, the resistance, and the deep affections that paved the way for their current existence. The physical assemblage holds the ancestral memory in a deeply textured way that, honestly, a digital photograph simply never could.
Which brings us to the absolute core of why we are discussing this today. So what does this all mean? Why does a deeply personal, incredibly specific history of a Colombian family matter to you listening right now?
It matters deeply because of the specific moment in history we are collectively navigating right now.
Yes, we are currently living through an absolute epidemic of digital amnesia. If you think about it for just a second, our memories, our family photos, the big milestones of our lives, they are overwhelmingly offloaded to these ephemeral, invisible clouds.
It's so true. We just swipe right past them.
Exactly. You scroll past a photo of a parent or a sibling on your phone screen, and within 2 seconds, it's gone. It's instantly replaced by an advertisement or some fleeting viral video. Hmm. We are entirely outsourcing our memories and our lineage to algorithms.
And the convenience of that digital storage, it comes at a catastrophic cost to our sense of identity and our understanding of our own foundations.
Trastio serves as a glaring, urgent warning against that convenience. It illustrates that we really must become conscious, deliberate archivists of our own lineages. Building a family narrative, constructing that effective architecture that can actually weather a crisis, it's not going to happen automatically just because you have a smartphone in your pocket.
Right. It doesn't just build itself.
It requires daily artisanal effort. Mm-hmm. You have to actively choose to remember the sacrifices that came before you. You have to virtually, you know, nail the wood together every single day to prevent the superficiality and the constant distraction of modern life from totally disintegrating your own family's symbolic body.
This raises an important question, though, because taking on the role of an archivist is a really complex responsibility. It doesn't merely mean curating and saving the pretty smiling photos from holidays and graduations.
No, it doesn't. And that is the crucial thought we want to leave you with today. We began by discussing the concept of building a house, right? Of taking your foundation and your walls with you when life forces an existential migration.
Right.
So when you reflect on your own family's history and the migrations you've endured, whether that's a physical relocation to a new city, maybe a deep interpersonal falling out, or just a massive life transition, how will you choose to document it?
It's a tough thing to confront.
It really is. When you sit down to build the architecture of your own history, will you be brave enough to use the most vibrant, noisy colors? Will you use that blaring, intense red paint, not just to celebrate the joyful reunions and the successes, but to intentionally frame your losses? Are you willing to permanently highlight your rifts, your guilt, and your own personal voluntary exiles?
That's the real challenge.
Because looking closely at the incredible raw work of Jairo Duque, it becomes glaringly evident that a true, unshakable symbolic body can only be built when we absolutely refuse to hide the splinters. You simply cannot build a load-bearing wall out of half-truths. So take the time to find your wood, grab a hammer, and don't be afraid of the red paint. We'll see you on the next Deep Dive.